Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
So earlier this month, we were talking to GP Dr. Maura Finn about the role played by the GP during pregnancy. And today we're going to continue our discussion about pregnancy and focusing on the later stages and indeed labour. So if you have any questions for Maura, there's still time to text us 51551. Hello, Maura.
Hello, good morning to you.
Lovely to have you with us again. So we'll talk about general advice, first of all, during this time. So it's the second and third trimester we're discussing really at this point. Nutrition is always something that comes up as soon as we start talking about pregnancy. So what's important to remember about the later stages and nutrition?
It's literally the same as in the early stages. It's about maintaining your optimum nutrition. So it's about making sure you have those essential vitamins that are very important in pregnancy. So that would be folic acid, vitamin D, calcium. So chew your diet is far better than anything else. So like good, maybe three servings of dairy in a day, oily fish, high protein foods, low fat, low sugar, low salt. But then the other thing that really kind of can tax a lot of women's minds is about eating for two and increased calorie intake and that worry about weight gain. And it's normal to gain weight in pregnancy. You have to gain weight in pregnancy. But you know, wheat eating for two is a bit of a misnomer. You do need an increased calorie intake, maybe about 300 extra calories in the second trimester, maybe up to 500 calories, extra calories in the third trimester. So it is normal to need to have more food. More fluid is really important as well, because think about it, you're making all this fluid around the baby as well. So you get dehydrated quite easily. So they're the most important things. Not to stress about it, but make sure what you're taking in is really good quality nutritional food. And avoid smoking, avoid alcohol, and reduce your coffee, tea intake, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to ask you about the types of checks that GPs will be doing around this time in the second and third trimester. But this listener has taken us very nicely into this, because she's telling us that she's 32 weeks pregnant and checks her blood pressure from time to time. It's been elevated for the last 2 days with no other symptoms. And she'd like to know, when do you recommend you should go to the doctor or the emergency department even to get it checked out? What do you say?
Okay, so what should be happening, and for this lady, 32 weeks, she should be having a checkup between the hospital and her GP every 2 weeks at this stage. And if there is anything outside of the norm, that's a guideline. It's not an absolute. So if she's concerned in any way, she calls her GP and she goes and gets checked. Now, when she says her blood pressure has raised a little bit, it could be a very little consequence. And very often you're starting from a low base, because in early pregnancy, your blood pressure tends to drop. But if her blood pressure is anything over 140, over 90, that would be something significant. And we check that routinely in every visit. But what we're looking for is elevation of blood pressure in itself, but also a condition called preeclampsia, which is where you have elevated blood pressure, protein in your urine, and maybe swelling. You may have swelling in your face or your ankles, your hands, you know. Now, a little bit of swelling is normal. We'll all remember not being able to get rings on and off, especially if the weather is hot. That's normal in pregnancy. But if it's outside the norm, then we worry about it. So our checkups, which this lady will be having, and if she goes to her GP today, which is what I think she should do, is a blood pressure check, checking her urine, checking the baby, checking her ankles and hands and make sure there isn't too much edema, and having a listen to the baby and making sure everything is fine. But if there's any concern, straight into the hospital, because preeclampsia is something that can really cause difficulty for the baby and the mother. And it's one of the leading causes for bringing on early labour, in especially in first-time mothers.
OK, so that woman you're saying should get in touch with the GP today about that.
Absolutely, okay. Yeah.
All right, so in general then, the checks that the GP will be doing over this time, particularly in the later stages, Maura?
So a urine, it does seem a bit strange. We become a bit obsessed with your urine when you're pregnant. So you always have to have a urine bottle in your back. But we check the urine for lots of different reasons. Number one, urinary tract infections are more common in pregnancy. We also look for protein, like I just mentioned. That's very important about preeclampsia. We look for sugar, because it could be a sign of gestational diabetes. We look for signs of blood that could be, you know, a sign of something else, or a discharge that might be developing. So a urine test is always needed. Blood pressure check is always needed. And then we check the baby. Some people weigh mammies. I don't tend to anymore, because it is very little value from a medical point of view. It used to be of value if the, when before scans were available just to see about baby's growth and stuff. But we're checking that by checking the tummy anyway. And I have to say, antenatal visits are usually just the nicest thing because they're usually confirming that everything is going well. You're listening to a fetal heart, which that never grows old. I mean, I still, every time I hear it, I just think that's such a privilege to be able to hear a baby's heartbeat. And some mammies will record that or have their partner aim at them, and it's a lovely thing to do. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, we also have time then to develop a relationship with the mother and answer questions that they may not be able to ask anybody else, and frequently things about like how they'll manage or will I be a good mum, you know, all those things that we all instinctively feel. And I actually often feel that that kind of natural anxiety or concern around pregnancy and about motherhood is such an important development step, because if you go into pregnancy and going into having a baby and you think it's going to be fly through it and it's going to be fine, they tend to be the people to get a big gland. You know, having a certain amount of, worry about it is essential and normal.
Very normal,
but allowing
yeah.
yourself to talk about it is what's really important.
Now, this is from Kate, who is expecting twins.
Wow, and, well done, Kate.
would like to know if she should plan for more GP visits for a twin pregnancy than she did with her first, which was a single pregnancy, and are there extra precautions to take? Now, she's given us some details. The twins are paternal. They're in separate sacs and placentas, etc.
Okay. Either way, yes, absolutely. And what will happen naturally with the hospital situation is that she will be kind of put in as kind of a more complicated pregnancy. So she will be put into a different sector. So the first time around, you know, first pregnancy, you always get a certain amount of visits. For second pregnancy, if it was a single pregnancy, it's actually kind of a little bit more relaxed. But she'll be back in the, you know, high risk pregnancy. Now, I'm not saying that to freak her out, but it actually is true with twin pregnancies or any multiple pregnancy. There's always a risk of every complication risk is heightened, and particularly early term delivery. So, you know, when you get twins beyond 35, 36 weeks, you think that's great. They've actually nearly full term. So that's significantly earlier than actual term, which is 40 weeks. So you do expect her to deliver early. You do expect her to have more complications with blood pressure. So more frequent visits in the hospital and the GP would be an absolutely normal way to go. Okay. But she's not to overly worry. I mean, it's hopefully going to work out really, really well for her, and it's a wonderful experience. But it's just to be that more cautious. And she may need to, if she's working, she may need to consider stepping away from work a little bit sooner as well.
Okay, that might just be something she'll have to do. You know, it mightn't be a choice depending on the job that you have, because it might be difficult physically to keep going.
Any job, like, I mean, even, you know, obviously kind of very physically active jobs are difficult, but even if you're sitting all the time, that's very difficult. You get very stiff when you're sitting in pregnancy. One of the big things, if you are in any job that you're sitting a lot, get up and move around as much as you possibly can. And that reduces your risk of varicose vein development, and then the swelling in the ankles and stuff. But God, it's hard. But twin or multiple pregnancies, working beyond 32 weeks, I think is really difficult.
Okay. Can we move towards the labour stage? And how do you feel about birth plans and people who come up with this plan that they expect to work out? And oftentimes, I'm sure, doesn't, because things change as you go through labour.
Yeah, I think it's a really good idea. I think it's a great idea to kind of have an active plan in your head as to what might happen, particularly in the early stages of labour, when those stages in the first, what we call the first stage of labour, when you're kind of the beginning of between contractions and when you're fully dilated. And the more you move around, and, you know, if you want to be in water, if you want to be kind of using a birthing ball, using your partner, whatever it is, that's really good. And talk to your midwife, talk to your friends, do some research online, do all of that. But the one thing I would say is that these are often aspirational. And if you have very strict ideas of what your perfect scenario would be, it very frequently doesn't work out like that. And that's nobody's fault. It's because the outcome is to have a healthy baby and a healthy mommy. And sometimes interventions are needed. So if somebody comes in with a birth plan and says, I will not have a cesarean section, for instance, well, nobody wants you to have a cesarean section, but it may be that your baby is in distress and you've been in labour for so many hours that nothing is happening and somebody has to intervene. So, you know, you cannot have these kind of like lines where you will not cross because, you know, safety is the ultimate goal here. But I do think they're a really good idea. I think, you know, you have to just think of them as being aspirational and you take advice from the medical people.
You have to expect the unexpected. Have your plan, but you've got to, you know, understand that things can change. Right, another listener question. I'm expecting a second baby in early June. I'm wondering about when to call the hospital in labour, particularly with a subsequent pregnancy. So how many contractions, how often, etc. This listener says our firstborn came via scheduled induction, so no experience. If it matters, we live about 40 to 60 minutes drive from the maternity hospital. We may need to factor in time to get our toddler to granny and granddad. Oh, these are all the things you think about, isn't it?
Isn't it? That's exactly what most people are dealing with, isn't it?
Yeah.
And actually, no two deliveries are the same. You know, that's the thing. You know, she doesn't have any kind of concept of what, you know, the that kind of film-based thing, you know, the waters break and you run into hospital. She doesn't know what that's like. What the midwives will say to you is that you should be having a contraction that lasts about up to a minute and about 5 minutes apart and getting stronger. But if that, you know, that's not an absolute. Nothing is an absolute in medicine. I mean, apart from, you know, that 40 to 60 minute drive, that's a concern. Now, the majority of people will have a drive of some sort. Managing, how do you get the toddler to the granny and granddad? Will they come to you? You know, all of those things. They're hard to manage too. And there's an awful lot of fear about going into the hospital, being told nothing's happening and being sent home. And women hate that. But I would say you're better to go in and be sent home again than miss the opportunity and have something happen on a motorway or have something happen and have a complication that happens because you're not in the hospital. The other things I would say, if you've a bleed or your Lycor has gone, if your waters are broken, you should go in. It doesn't really matter about, you know, bleed absolute in there straight away. But even with the waters, go in. Don't wait for the contractions because you can have the waters gone and contractions may take a while to come. But there's a risk of infection ascending into the baby if the waters are broken. So that's that is a reason to actually attend. But there's no absolute, and ring the hospital if she's not sure.
Mm-hmm. A quick one here on flying. So this listener has a very close friend's wedding in the UK when she will be 33 weeks pregnant. Is it safe to fly?
You see, that's okay. The UK, the guidelines are, you know, if it's a short flight, anything shorter than 3 hours, you really can fly up to 38 weeks. Long haul flights beyond 4 hours, 36 weeks, but they're in absolute necessities. The problem is, even with a short flight, what if you go into labour in the plane? What about the healthcare wherever you're going to? What if your symptoms are usually exaggerated in a plane too, the swelling, the heat, the discomfort. Your risk of a DVT, which is a clot, is heightened in pregnancy anyway and in long haul flights. So really, it really depends on the circumstances. But I would say with the UK, 33 weeks, if she has no other complications, she's probably fine to go.
Maura, thank you so much, Dr. Maura Finn there, GP in County Clare.